From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, in a 407-1 vote, the U.S. House of Representatives has overwhelmingly approved a bill that calls on the Trump administration to take tough action against China's concentration-style camps housing an estimated 1.5 million Uyghur Muslims. Now, the passage of the bill drew swift condemnation from Beijing. In just a moment, I'll talk with Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who was a key sponsor of the Senate version of the bill. The bill now has to be agreed upon between the two chambers, and then it'll go to the president for signature. And last night, by a 13-9 party line vote, the Democratic-led House Intelligence Committee voted to adopt and issue its 300-page impeachment report, which claims President Trump misused his office by seeking foreign help in the 2020 election. The matter is now with the House Judiciary Committee, even as we speak. I'll talk with Congressman Warren Davidson about why he doesn't believe that the Democrats have made an effective case to impeach the president, and what Congress is not getting done as a result of this remove Trump obsession of the Democrats. And for the past 20 years, military members have been able to voluntarily wear dog tags with Bible verses on them, giving them light and hope in some of their darkest times. But all of this could be coming to an end. I'll talk with Michael Berry, Chief of Staff for First Liberty Institute and the Director of Military Affairs. Also, for those who remember, the individuals pushing for the redefinition of marriage and human sexuality, one of the claims they led with was, well, this won't affect you. Well, the evidence has overwhelmingly proven that statement to be false. Beyond those who have lost jobs and positions, the indoctrination of our children in our schools with sexual confusion, there is the latest debate that is now raging over the use of transgender pronouns. Now, some Christian leaders have put forth the idea of gender hospitality. What is gender hospitality? We'll talk about that and how Christians should respond with Professor Robert Gagnon, Professor of New Testament Theology at Houston Baptist University. All right, lots to cover today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. By the way, let me thank all of you who called in and participated in our Giving Tuesday match yesterday. I want to inform you that we met the match. In fact, we reached our goal and exceeded it with individuals calling in. We raised over $119,000 yesterday, meeting the match and fulfilling it. And so I want to thank you for that and for being a part of partnering with the Family Research Council. And there'll be, in fact, if you didn't have an opportunity and you would like to participate, we still have folks that are standing by that will take your phone call today. That number, again, if you were not able to participate and partner with us, and the need continues as this program comes to you through the work of the Family Research Council, not funded by the government or anybody else, just by folks like you all across America who care about faith, family, and freedom. So we got folks standing by. Take your call, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008, or you can go to TonyPerkins.com. Okay, the senator's running a little bit late, but let me give you a quick rundown on this bill. It originated in the Senate back in September, and Senator Rubio was the key sponsor of the bill, met with him, discussed this issue some months back. It came out of the Senate in September, went to the House. The language was changed, some would argue strengthened. I'm not sure. We're still combing through to see what the effects of the changes were. But needless to say, it has China's attention. Beijing speaking out, saying that their efforts in Xinjiang, where the Uyghur Muslims are at, is not an issue of religious oppression. It is not a human rights issue. It is an issue of anti-terrorism and anti-secession, saying they're trying to bring in this ethnic minority. But the evidence suggests something much different, that these as Chris Smith said, I'll quote Chris Smith, who has called these Chris Smith, congressman from New Jersey, has called, quote, these modern-day concentration camps. It is audaciously repressive, involving mass internment of millions on a scale not seen since the Holocaust. We cannot be silent. We must demand an end to these barbaric practices, end quote. That's according to Chris Smith, who has actually been on this program many times talking not only about the Uyghur Muslims, but other repressed minorities in various parts of the world, including China. China being one of the worst when it comes to religious persecution. So China saying they are going to take actions if this law is, or this bill rather, is signed into law. In fact, the Chinese state-owned tabloid, the Global Times, quoted experts as saying Beijing will take, quote, strong countermeasures. Now, China has denied any mistreatment of the Uyghurs and says the camps are providing vocational training. Now, this gets into something else we've talked about on this program, and we're going to continue to do more digging. In fact, during the holidays, I plan on doing some maybe a special program on this, that U.S. businesses doing business in China, there are reports that some are benefiting from essentially what slave labor of individuals that are in these camps. We've also got reports. Now, Falun Gong, which is another religious minority that has been heavily persecuted in China, not to be confused with what's happening here in with the Uyghurs. But there are reports, just like what's happening with Falun Gong, that there is organ harvesting that is taking place in some of these camps where these Uyghurs are. Obviously, you're not volunteering to do this, but they're having their organs taken. We've also talked about how the government has this family program where not people who are really family, but they come in and stay in the homes of some of these Uyghur Muslims as a part of their re-education program. If the husband, the sons are in the prison camps, someone comes in, a male, and will stay in the home. I mean, so it's just it's atrocious what is taking place, what the Chinese are doing to the Uyghur Muslims. And there's no there is no evidence to suggest that there's a terrorism problem among these Uyghur Muslims. Congress speaking out very forcefully. And, of course, this coming on the heels of President Trump last week signing into law the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, which we'll also talk to Senator Hawley if he makes it. I know he's tied up. But he was a key sponsor of that bill in Hong Kong. Of course, China responding earlier this week, we talked about it on Monday, denying U.S. military ships and planes to dock or land in Hong Kong. Now warning that there will be other repercussions if the United States, if the president signs this latest measure, the Uyghur Act, into law. I have to say, I'm encouraged by the Trump administration. And in fact, I was somewhat, I wasn't sure when it came to the Hong Kong bill last week. And because of the trade issue and the reluctance historically of of Republican administrations from wanting to interject human rights issues into the trade talks and that the two would become blurred. This administration has not shied away from that, not afraid to advance this whole issue of religious freedom and human rights, even with China, where past administrations have been afraid to disrupt the trade with China, even though we've usually come out on the – when you look at the trade deficit, we've come out on the short end of the stick. So I have to, again, this is another area this administration has been, just gets high marks for putting human rights, religious freedom above economic issues and concerns. That is uncommon, does not happen, has not happened historically. That goes back to 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, it's probably been 25 years ago or more, when the debate was raging over giving China permanent most favored nation status when the whole trade issue began. And there were those raising the questions then about China's human rights record. And the argument was driven primarily from the business community. Oh, no, no, no. We'll change that. Yeah, it might be a problem. But by opening up the doors of trade, we'll do business with them and problem solved. We will export our values and we'll import their materials, their products, and it'll be a win-win. Well, it hadn't happened that way. By the way, if you've not seen the ad that we did about the NBA, you can actually watch that on the website, TonyPerkins.com, where we've got, you know, sports leagues, we've got businesses, Fortune 500 companies that are afraid to challenge China on anything. In fact, they're letting China, Hollywood, same thing, letting China run their business and tell them what to do and what they can and cannot do. And this administration, this president is standing up, and he's doing it based upon the blatant human rights violations and the religious freedom violations that China is engaged in. Now, he's still pursuing trade talks, saying that, in fact, last time I was in the White House a couple of weeks ago, he was discussing that they're close to a deal. Now, some have said that these two bills, the one signed last Wednesday regarding Hong Kong democracy, that could upset the discussions on trade, and, of course, this one as well. But we'll see what the president does. I don't think we're going to get the senator. I think he must be tied up if we get him. If we get him, we'll bring him in a little bit later if we can. We've got a full agenda for today's program. So, look, just to remind you what's coming up, Congressman Warren Davis is going to be joining us with an update on the impeachment report that was voted out of the House Intelligence Committee yesterday. It's now before the Judiciary Committee, even as we speak. We'll also be checking in with Michael Berry at First Liberty about this is another example of what the attack on religious freedom that began under the last administration that we're still having to go and clean up. And this is an effort to remove Bible verses that are voluntarily placed on dog tags. So we're going to talk about that. And pronoun hospitality. Have you heard that term? We're going to talk about that a little bit later. All right, folks, you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch and some guests in just a moment. Don't go away.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we were just talking about the Uyghur Act of 2019, and joining us now is Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. He was tied up, and he's just now joining us. Senator, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
You were a sponsor of the Senate version of this bill. The House version, a bit different. It looks actually a little stronger than the Senate version. But in essence, explain very quickly to our listeners what the bill will do.
Well, it's important to give the administration tools to hold Beijing accountable for what it's doing to the Uyghurs. And you know what the Uyghurs are, your audience probably knows, are an ethnic minority, a religious minority living within China. And Beijing is literally putting these people into concentration camps. I mean, I don't use that term lightly, but that's what they are. They're actual concentration camps. They're doing brainwashing in these camps. They call it re-education, of course. We've all heard that before. And this is the Communist Party attempting to enforce to shove down the throats of these people their ideology. And this is an expression. I mean, the bill in the House and in the Senate versions would give the administration the ability to stand up to this. And it also expresses the sense of the United States Congress that this is not something that we can allow to happen. And Tony, I think it's have a piece with the work we've done on Hong Kong, where it's vital to say to Beijing that oppressing your own people, that stamping out faith, that going after people of faith and ethnic minorities is not permissible. We won't allow it. And that their desire to dominate, China's desire to dominate the world, is not something we're going to stand by and watch happen.
Senator, do you think the Senate will work out the differences with the House and will get this bill signed into law before Christmas?
I don't know if it'll happen before Christmas. I hope so. I am frustrated at the pace at which the Senate moves on a range of fronts, and this is one of them. I'm proud to sponsor the bill, as you said, and I hope that this is something we can take up. Frankly, I think this ought to be something that we do unanimously. I mean, this doesn't need to be a long process, in my view. What we did with the Hong Kong Act, as you and I've talked about a number of times, is eventually we just took it to the floor. And we just voted on the floor, and it was unanimous out of the Senate. It passed by unanimous consent, it's called, where nobody even objected to it. So we didn't even have to have a roll call vote. I think we could do the same thing here. for the Uyghurs bill. But however it's done, I think it's important to keep the pressure up and to press forward.
Well, your work on Hong Kong, on the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, drew a quick response from Beijing. They were not happy with that bill. They're rattling the saber again, saying that, strong actions will be taken if this one is signed into law. Should we be listening to what China has to say?
No. Beijing is always threatening. They're always saber rattling. But the truth is that we are the ones here who are in the driver's seat. China needs our supply chains. They need our investment. They need our trade. They are not in a position, ultimately, to stand up to us. Now, they want to be. I mean, what they want to do, Tony, as we've talked about, is China, Beijing, wants to dominate first the Asian region, and then they want to dominate the whole world. And they are working hard at that.
Right.
And we've given too much ground over the years. This is part of why we need to stand up now. But we should not listen to a thing that Beijing says. We need to go forward and stand up for our principles and keep the pressure on China.
I was talking before you joined us about how I'm actually encouraged by this administration, even in the midst of trade talks with China, where most run scared, even in Republican ranks in years past and previous administrations, are interjecting these issues right at the forefront, human rights issues, religious freedom issues. And I have to commend the administration that they're leading on this. And it's so good to see Congress in one aspect coming together pretty much unified and standing with the administration on this.
Well, it's great to have an administration that is willing to confront China and is willing to actually stand up and say, we are not going to allow you to continue to take our jobs, to steal our property, and then, as you say, Tony, to run roughshod over the things we value most, like religious freedom, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, the things that they want to deny Hong Kong, for instance, and what they're trying to do to the Uyghurs and others. So I think that the president's absolutely to be commended. And, we have got to continue to keep the pressure up. We're in for the long struggle here with China. Mm-hmm. We need to be realistic. I mean, this is going to be they are a threat to us. This is going to go on for years. And we are starting here finally to show some strength, and we've got to keep it up.
Well, this is another good example of how to do that. Senator, thanks so much for joining us, and I appreciate all the work that you do on behalf of religious freedom and human rights around the world, including right here in the United States.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, absolutely. At Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, I got to move right into my next guest here. Yesterday, as I mentioned, the Democrat-led House Intelligence Committee voted to adopt and issue a scathing report on the findings from the panel's impeachment inquiry, accusing President Trump of misusing his office to seek foreign help in the 2020 presidential race. Now, the 13-9 party line vote on the 300-page report was a necessary step before the document could be transferred to the House Judiciary Committee, which has it right now. Joining me now with a quick analysis is Congressman Warren Davidson. He represents the 8th District of Ohio. Congressman Davidson, thanks so much for sticking by. I know that we were running a little late on that segment. I want to ask you first off, before I bring you in, if you can stick around through the break, because I want to talk with you about this, and I appreciate you joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks. Always great to talk with you, Tony.
Your view on this, you say the Democrats, they don't have anything in this report.
No, I mean, it's all window dressing to cover for the fact that they don't have facts. And, the Republican witness today, Turley, highlighted that they don't have facts and they couldn't prove the case. And then they try to pivot and say, well, you know, this isn't a criminal case. This is impeachment. And so they want to shift to a lower standard because it's a political action while the real requirements aren't met.
If we're talking about the president of the United States removing him from office, I would think it would be a higher standard. All right, we got to go to a break. You're going to stick around with us. I'm going to finish this conversation on the other side of the break. Folks, Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio, my guest. We're going to continue this conversation about the latest on the impeachment hearing. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry for Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. The website is TonyPerkins.com. Talking with Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio, represents the 8th District, serves on the Financial Services Committee, discussing the Democrat Intelligence Committee, Democrat-led House Intelligence Committee report that was issued last night, voted out of committee 13-9, long party lines. 300-page report now goes to the – it's actually right now before the Judiciary Committee as they were taking testimony today. Now, Warren, thanks so much for sticking through the break. I want you to finish your thought there, because when we went to the break, you were talking about how, you know, they're saying there should be a lower standard here because we're not talking about a criminal court. But we're talking about this sitting removing a sitting president from the United States from office.
Yeah.
I think you would want at least a standard that meets that which we use in a criminal trial.
Well, it just shows that it's really all personal animus. So you saw that with the Democrat witnesses that they called today. You know, one of them has been pushing for impeachment since 3 months after the president was inaugurated. Another one has to cross to the other side of the street because she can't be on the same side of the street as the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. So these were the kind of witnesses they brought. But that fits with where the Democrat committee is. Once you send this out of the impeachment committee over to the Judiciary Committee, 17 of the 24 Democrats on that committee have already voted for impeaching the president prior to this whole Ukraine narrative coming in. So it's not like you have an objective body looking at the subject.
I mean, you have an impeachment crowd looking for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go back to – let's go back to, like, say, remember Koskinen, who was the director of the IRS?
Right.
There, Republicans were making the case, like, look, impeachment isn't we're prosecuting a crime. We're not going to put Mr. Koskinen in jail. We just want to fire him from the IRS. They're, oh, no, high crimes, misdemeanors. So it definitely shifts. And, you know, I don't want to say that no one has shifted. And if you go back at historically, you'll see Nadler's views clearly have shifted over time from the 90s when he was here in Congress and Republicans were impeaching President Clinton, who did actually commit a crime. Here they can't even prove the facts of a crime the president has committed, and they want that to be the bar.
But even as politically polarized as we were in the 90s with Clinton, it wasn't a pure party line vote.
It was not. And if you think about it, so what would happen next? If they go through the Judiciary Committee and if the House votes to impeach, then the Senate takes up a path to say, what are the rules for this going to be? And when they voted in the Senate on the rules for how to proceed on the impeachment of Bill Clinton, it passed 100-0 in the Senate. There are no one I've spoken with is saying that there's any version of what would happen next that would pass 100-0 in the Senate. It's just very partisan.
I know you've got to go, so I want to move to another question real quickly, because this is really what should be focused on, in my view. I mean, I think this is all political theater when it comes to the impeachment and all of this stuff, because nobody's mind is being changed by this. That's what the polling shows, and it's very partisan. And you've got, as you said, you've got people who have been saying since day one he should be impeached, saying it again. That's all they've been saying for 3 years. But you have pointed out, in fact, you tweeted that while the House Democrats continue their relentless efforts to impeach President Trump, I think of all that is failing to get done. That's the real issue here that I think needs to be focused on, is what Congress is not doing because of their obsession within removing President Trump from office.
Yeah, and it's a little deeper than that. So while Democrats will say, well, we passed this, we passed that, they're passing the most partisan bills in the world, knowing there's zero chance the Senate's going to take those versions up. They're not even pretending to work. And there are bills like the Green New Deal that passed that weren't even written in a way that could actually become law, even if it were to somehow pass. It's all messaging stuff, and it's all positioning to try to win the big race in 2020, and that's all this is about for Democrats, and it's all that the House floor is about as well. There is not a serious effort to legislate or solve problems, and it's frustrating, frankly, to some of my Democratic colleagues, but that doesn't change how they're voting.
Yeah. Well, we wish they would focus on actually getting some things done in a bipartisan way by working with Republicans to solve some of the pressing problems. Like one you point out is the border issue and immigration. Those are some really significant issues. Congressman, I know you got to go. I want to thank you for joining us. Thanks for sticking around. And as always, great to have you on. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks again, Tony.
All right. Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio. All right. For the past 20 years, military members have been able to wear dog tags with Bible verses on them, not paid for by the government. But it's something that a nonprofit has had the license authority from the branches of service. And this gives them kind of light and hope in some of their darkest times. Now, for some of the Gold Star families, this is one of their most cherished possessions to remember their loved ones who made the ultimate sacrifice. But all of this could be coming to an end. Why? Well, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk with Michael Berry, Chief of Staff for First Liberty Institute and the Director of their Military Affairs. This is one of those issues that, what was done in the last administration, we still have a lot of cleaning up to do, and this is one of them. We'll talk about it next with Michael Berry. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Tony Perkins here, your host, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as I was mentioning before the break, for the last 20 years, military members have been able to wear dog tags with Bible verses on them, not paid for by the government, nonprofit doing it. But that could all be coming to an end. Why? Joining us, Michael Berry, Chief of Staff for First Liberty Institute and the Director of Military Affairs. Michael, thanks for sticking around. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right. Mikey Weinstein, popping up again, founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, is complaining about these dog tags. What's his beef?
Well, they've perpetually offended Mikey Weinstein. Has complained that our client, First Liberty Institute's client, Shields of Strength, and its founder and president, Kenny Vaughn, that he makes and distributes and in many cases gives away, donates out of his own pocket, these replica dog tags that just have an inspirational or motivational or encouraging reference to scripture, or sometimes it'll just be literally the words without any reference to scripture. But apparently, according to Mikey, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, and he wants the military to go after our client and to prevent them from being able to do that.
Now, just so I'm clear on this, what we're talking about, these dog tags that are made by a nonprofit, the issue is that they are, the dog tags have the emblem of the military branch of service, as I understand it, which is requires a trademark licensing from the branch of service. And what they're saying is you can't put a Bible verse if you have that trademark logo on the dog tag. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, for example, on one side of the replica dog tag, it might have Semper Fi with an eagle, globe, and anchor, which is, you know, kind of the common, commonly used emblem for the Marine Corps. And on the other side, it might have a reference to, you know, Philippians 4:13, right? And it just said, "I can do all things through He who gives me strength," or Joshua 1:9. Those are some of the more common references. And those are just uplifting, encouraging, inspirational verses. And, you know, but like I said, Mikey Weinstein seems to think wrongly, but seems to think that that violates the Constitution and that the Army should, should sue or take legal action against our client, Shields of Strength.
Now, he has made over 4 million dog tags with these scriptures on. In fact, I think I actually have one. This is not being paid for by the government. This is not government money. It is simply a nonprofit doing it that has the trademark license approval to have that emblem on there. So there's no money here. There's nothing that the government is doing. So what ground does Mikey have to say that these dog tags can't be produced and voluntarily worn by our members of the military?
Oh, he has no ground to do that. It's really nothing more than a publicity stunt. Well, actually, it is more than a publicity stunt. It's a cowardly act because Kenny Vaughn and I have met now many service members, in many instances, Gold Star families, those who have lost loved ones in combat, serving in the military. And to them, these small tokens of faith and military service mean the world. And to deprive them or other families of the ability to have a small token of faith and military service is just the deepest insult you can imagine. And they tell us in tears, you know, how dare they deprive or deny somebody the ability to have just a dog tag that says, I can do all things. And on the other side, it says, you know, U.S. Army or U.S. Air Force or whatever. It's a cowardly act by Mikey Weinstein. And at First Liberty Institute, I can barely take it anymore. And I said to Kenny, we won't stop until we're able to make sure that you are allowed to continue to provide these. And like you said, he's produced almost 5 million of these now over the years, and he's given away approximately 2 million of those 5 million.
Now, in response to Weinstein, the Army Trademark Licensing Program Director, Paul Jensen, wrote to your client in August saying, quote, you are not authorized to put Bible verses on your Army products. Now, what this sounds like to me, Michael, is that what we have are a lot of this holdover ideology from the Obama administration of hostility toward religious expression in the military, and it needs to be cleaned up.
That's right. Even more telling on that email, Tony, was the subject line of the email. The subject line said negative press, and then they cited, they attached the URL to an article highlighting Mikey Weinstein's complaint to the Army. So clearly their motivation for telling Kenny Vaughn to stop producing these dog tags was simply the fact that Mikey Weinstein had generated some negative publicity and generated a little bit of heat on the Army, and they immediately raised the white flag and capitulated to that bully. And like you said, I mean, enough is enough. You know, when are we...
Right.
When are people in the Department of Defense going to realize that the Constitution, the First Amendment specifically, and federal law, such as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and other laws, they have to mean something, and that those don't stop at the Pentagon's front door?
Yeah, this is the one area in this administration. They've almost every agency has come into alignment with the White House's religious freedom protection initiatives. The one area that still is lagging behind is the Department of Defense, and it's I'm glad that First Liberty is there. You guys are on this because it needs to be cleaned up. Michael Berry, thanks so much for joining us today, and as always, appreciate the great work you guys do.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Michael Berry with First Liberty. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, I'm going to shift right into our next topic. There is a debate of sorts in the Christian community over what pronouns to use for those who self-identify as transgender. Now, some Christian leaders have basically said, as a display of mercy, we should show gender hospitality. Not sure what that is. But is that not being dishonest? I mean, how do we show both truth and mercy? Joining me now is Professor Robert Gagnon. He is professor of New Testament theology at Houston Bible University. He is the foremost authority on the Bible and homosexual practice. Professor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony. I should say Houston Baptist University.
All right. What did I say? Houston
Bible.
Baptist. Oh, I'm
Houston
sorry.
Bible. Sorry, that's okay.
But the Baptists still use the Bible, don't they?
One would hope so, yes.
That was a joke. That was a joke from a Baptist. Let's talk about this because there's this debate that's raging that somehow we should accommodate those who are confused about their gender, and that's showing mercy by using the pronoun that they prefer. What do you say?
Well, I'd say it's not considering a larger picture, first of all. When Paul deals, for example, with a case of immorality at Corinth, the case of the incestuous man in chapter 5 of 1 Corinthians, he's basically looking at three different dimensions. He's looking at how does this affect the community, how does it affect the God who redeemed you, and how does it affect the offender? And when we apply that methodology to this particular issue, it doesn't point in the direction of so-called pronoun hospitality or generosity of spirit. In fact, to call a man a woman, to refer to him by feminine pronouns and a gender-specific feminine name, is itself to pass judgment on the individual as having demeaned, degraded, and dishonored the stamp of gender that God as creator has placed on that person, which this person now degrades. So that actually would be an act of judgment, consigning them to God's judgment rather than helping them. I'm not saying create an immediate disturbance, but I'm saying that one thing we do not have a right to do is to speak an egregious lie that is abhorrent to God, that stumbles other brothers and sisters in the community of faith, and participates in the self-deception of the offender that can get that person sent to hell.
I mean, Jesus himself said that you'll know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And I would think that as representatives of Jesus Christ, followers of Jesus, that we should speak truth. Speak it as Ephesians says, speak it in love. Where we talk about mercy and truth, it's not about trying to condemn someone for the confusion they may have, but it's certainly not to play along and facilitate a deception, as you point out, that has not only eternal consequences, it has temporal consequences as well.
Indeed. And how does it affect the other individuals in the congregation to call somebody by their pretend pronoun, which actually dishonors the person that God intended them to be, is to communicate a message to everybody else in the community that this is no big deal. When the reality is, when we actually look at the biblical text, in Deuteronomy, even to cross-dress a man that cross-dresses a woman, itself is a capital sentence. It's regarded as a tovah in Hebrew, which is the word for something that's an abomination or abhorrent, repulsive to God. There are a lot of things that God does within the biblical narrative that people think who are offending God, this is no big deal. But this actually is a big deal to God. Right from the beginning in the creation text in Genesis 1:27, when God talks about the creation of human beings in God's image, he's already talking about the creation as male and female. And while it's true that animals are also can also be gender differentiated, animals are not made in God's image. This text, Genesis 1:27, by bringing those two points closely together, being made male and female and being made in God's image, is a way of saying that how we treat our biological gender matters to God a great deal and has considerable repercussions for our own life. So it's not an issue that we can really treat lightly. Nor are we really being gracious to the individual when we call them something that actually demeans what God has made. It's actually, again, participating in their judgment.
So, Professor, why do you think that, you know, when you look at these issues, let's take in the New Testament where Paul talks about the, you know, various issues, whether it's homosexuality, adultery, fornication. I mean, there's the whole list of things. Why do we treat this issue of transgenderism and homosexuality different than the rest? Well, I mean, we wouldn't have a day celebrating adultery. We wouldn't,
right.
We wouldn't refer to them as they want to be referred to, that make believe that their relationship is okay when we know it's not. So why do we treat this differently?
And you would, in fact, think the response would be the exact opposite consistently by the church, because not only is the issue of homosexual practice and transgenderism a case of immorality, but it's a case of high immorality in Scripture, because the male-female requirement for sexual relations is grounded in the creation text in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, and made the basis, Jesus says, for all other sexual ethics standards. So it's not just even taking like an issue that is wrong, but maybe it's not the worst thing. This among sexual ethic issues, we're playing with fire at this point, because it's regarded as one of those irreducible minimums of human sexual ethics, that God created us as a complementary sexual pair, male and female, a sexual binary, the implication of which should be a limitation of two persons to a sexual union, and many other standards. And for us to be able to tinker with that or play with that or with a wink and a nod, say, it's okay to avoid confrontation, I'll just use this feminine pronoun for a man, or use this distinctively feminine name for a man, when in fact we've lost the sense of how egregious an offense this is to God to commit. Why do we do such a thing? Tony, I'll take your question as a rhetorical question, because you've spoken on this quite rightly many times, and that is that the church is simply responding to public peer pressure and ultimately wanting to be liked. This is not about being gracious to the so-called transgender individual who comes into the community. It's actually about really not overly offending the broader culture to which we belong.
Which, when it is in defiance of God, that's where we take our offense. It's not about us being offended. It is about offending God. And that's where we say, we can't go there. We just can't go there.
It's interesting that one of the texts that has been used by persons promoting this so-called generosity of spirit and pronoun hospitality is to cite Acts 17, when Paul goes to Athens and identifies for them who the unknown God is. The argument that they're making is, you see, he doesn't rail against them as idolaters and so forth. Well, but when he makes that speech about identifying the unknown God as the true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and of Jesus, who raised Jesus from the dead, it's all within the same discussion, within sentences of making that statement about the unknown God. He's calling them to repentance for their idolatry and thinking that gods can be made in the image of human beings and of animals as statues and gold or silver or some other element. He's rejecting that and condemning that right to their face within sentences of making the comment about the unknown God.
Professor Gagnon, we're going to have to leave it there because, unfortunately, we're out of time. We could continue this conversation, and I hope we will at another time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, we are out of time today. I would say when we deal with this issue, and some of you may be in these holiday events, be prayerful, be compassionate, but be truthful. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, you've done everything you can do when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.